Films in Focus with David Sterrett is underwritten by The Movie House, your destination for first-run Hollywood and independent movies, and a digital portal to the Met Opera, National Theater Live, and special events worldwide in Millerton, New York, and on the web, themoviehouse.net.
David Sterrett is the former chair of the New York Film Critics Circle and National Society of Film Critics, contributing writer at Cineast, film professor at the Maryland Institute College of Art, and Robin Hood Radio's very own critic. He joins us weekly the films The Devil Wears Prada 2, Mistura, and Apex.
I must say that The Devil Wears Prada 2 is not a very original title. This is, of course, a sequel, long delayed, to The Devil Wears Prada, which came out 20 years ago. And now, yes, there's a sequel with the number 2 at the end of it. And it's not a very original movie either. So I guess the title in that way is quite suitable. Directed by the same director, David Frankel, stars a lot of the same people. It's perfectly pleasant. I found The Devil Wears Prada perfectly pleasant. And I now find The Devil Wears Prada 2 to be perfectly pleasant. That doesn't mean it's exciting or fascinating or wonderful or anything like that, but it sure is glitzy and glamorous. And so I guess that carries a certain pleasure all its own. Anyway, what we have now is a number of characters from the original The Devil Wears Prada. We have Meryl Streep as that devil. Now, this is not, in case anybody doesn't know this already, a supernatural movie. She's just a very unpleasant boss in some way. She runs a magazine, a fashion magazine, and she can be very tyrannical and very demanding and wants everything to be exactly her own way and exactly the way she wants it. So she's kind of an unpleasant boss to deal with. So in the original The Devil Wears Prada, we had a young woman named Andy, played by Anne Hathaway, who came to work for the Meryl Streep character, whose name is Miranda. And it was a tough climb, but Andy finally learned how to more or less adjust herself to Miranda's demands and so forth and so on. And all kinds of little adventures happened along the way and changes happened to the magazine and this and that. And the whole thing came out reasonably happily in the end. I'll mention a couple of other characters from the original film. One is Emily Blunt, who plays a woman named Emily, who is an assistant. And she's also back in this movie. And like all of them, she's 20 years older. And then we have Stanley Tucci as a character named Nigel, a sort of a big assistant who does layouts for the magazine and is a very important figure there. So they're all back. And as I keep saying, they're all 20 years older, by the way, as am I. So The Devil Wears Prada 2 brings these characters back, and we have Meryl Streep still demanding and somewhat unpleasant and all of that, and we have Nigel still the loyal guy who's always there to help and to help everybody from Miranda to Andy and everybody in between, and we have Andy, who has now struck up a very healthy career as a journalist elsewhere. But the very first thing that happens in the movie is that she and all of her fellow staff members at this newspaper, they all get fired. They get fired by text when they're at an awards dinner. So what do you know? Now Andy needs a job again. And so she ends up back at Runway Magazine again, working again for Miranda. But this time there's a lot of twists because Andy has a secret agenda. She has gotten a book deal to write a sort of a secret memoir or maybe biography or something of Miranda. So she also has that going on in her life. And we have, again, all kinds of misadventures and adventures and little things happen and big changes take place at the magazine. One thing that happens is that the man who kind of owns the whole operation, the parent corporation from the magazine, dies at one point in the story and his son takes over. His son, by the way, played by BJ Novak, who I remember fondly from The Office on TV. He takes over and he doesn't care about fashion and he doesn't care about the magazine. And so there's a whole lot of problems that may come along for that. That turns out to actually be sort of a minor subplot of the film, but it's there and it's sort of important in a way. And then all kinds of secondary and tertiary characters flood around the margins of the movie, but mainly we're watching the big adventures of Miranda, who is still demanding and still unpleasant and who is still hoping that someday she will be the boss of everything, but she probably won't get her way. And Andy is still the young sort of innocent who just likes to work and likes to do things and has this sort of semi-secret agenda of writing the book about Miranda, but who also does good things for Runway Magazine while she's there. And then we have Nigel, who I really like. Stanley Tucci is such a wonderful actor. actor. I think sometimes he overdoes it, but it's always such fun to watch him. And here he plays a gentle, lovable character, which is also one of his specialties, and he does it extremely well. Emily Blunt is good as Emily, although Emily is not a very appealing character, not even appealing the way Miranda is in a sort of power way. So Emily Blunt has a sort of a thankless role there, but I think she handles it well. Kenneth Branagh appears briefly in the movie. Lucy Liu appears briefly in the movie. So we have a good cast going on. So The Devil Wears Prada 2 is basically more of the same. The same spiffy, snazzy, great-looking stuff. Oh, if you like fashion, the screen is just filled with fashion from beginning to end. All kinds of fabulous dresses and gowns and whatnots parade across the screen. That, of course, was one of the great appeals of the original Devil Wears Prada. Definitely part of the appeal of The Devil Wears Prada, too. There are some things in it that are sort of weird. There's one point when they're apparently setting up some sort of function to happen in Milan, Italy, which is fine. That makes perfect sense because there's a whole subplot of the movie involves stuff that's going on in Milan, Italy. But they're doing it in the chapel where the famous Leonardo da Vinci painting of the Last Supper is. So, okay, it just so happens that last year I went to see the Last Supper in that very chapel. They allow in about a dozen people at a time, and only for about 10 minutes at a time. And then you have to get out because that's how jealously they guard the welfare of that fresco. It doesn't really work out that they're setting up some sort of a function in that room in this movie. So anyway, that's bogus. And a lot of things about The Devil Wears Prada 2 are bogus, as were a lot of things in the original Devil Wears Prada. But it's a fun movie, has a great cast. It's fun to watch Meryl Streep just play with this character and have a great time. Everybody else is good too. And so I can recommend The Devil Wears Prada too. Now for Mistura, a Peruvian movie. Something we don't get all that often is a movie from Peru. Actually, a number of countries were involved in the production of this movie, but it's primarily Peruvian. And that alone makes it, I think, worthy of some attention and of some interest. It's sort of a mysterious title. It's not really explained until the very, very end of the movie, but it has kind of a nice story, and it's a nice movie. It's not a major movie, but it's a nice film. So, okay, Mistura is about a woman who really is rich and powerful because she's married to a rich and powerful man. She herself comes from a very privileged background. Her father was a Peruvian ambassador to France for quite a long while, and she grew up largely in France, our main character. But now she is married to a man and they have a very rich and powerful life. But then the man runs off with a younger woman, and this completely upends the life of our main character. I should mention that her name is Norma, and the husband, he runs out on her with this younger woman, and it causes a tremendous scandal. They're a prominent family, they're always in the news, they're always in the headlines, and so everybody knows about this. And poor Norma is really scorned by some of her friends, scorned by society. Some people are sympathetic to her, but a lot of people figure, oh, well, now she's just a loser. And so the poor woman is at sea. One person who appears poised to help her is her chauffeur, whose name is Oscar. And he seems to be a very nice man, and he seems to be very sympathetic to what she's going through. But she, being a very haughty individual, more or less scorns him. They're from different classes. She wants really nothing to do with her chauffeur, except to have him standing in front of the car when she's ready to get into the car and then to drive her wherever she wants to go. But he's a nice man, and as the movie proceeds, they become closer and closer. So what does Norma decide to do now that she has been scorned by her husband, scorned by some of her friends, that she's really, really living a very difficult life now. Financially, it's going to be very insecure and all that sort of thing. Well, she gets the idea of opening a restaurant. She's always kind of liked food. Okay, so she opens up a French restaurant. Remember, her father had been an ambassador to France for a long time, and she's very familiar with that country. So she opens up a French restaurant, and a lot of this movie is about her efforts to open up this restaurant and facing real struggles now, a real challenge of a huge project that's going to take all kinds of effort and cooperation from others. She becomes a better person. So that's really what this movie is about. And yes, that chauffeur Oscar becomes a very, very great helper to her, and they become very, very, shall I say, very close by the end of the movie. So she overcomes her class prejudices. She overcomes her great worries about whether she can actually survive in the world on her own. And it's one of these movies where a person grows and improves and becomes a better human being. And that's always sort of nice to see. It's all very, very predictable, and it's all sort of nostalgic. The movie, for reasons that are not entirely clear, is set in Lima, Peru, but it's set more than 50 years ago. So it's a long time ago. At that time, Peru had a military dictatorship, but that's just barely even touched on by the movie. But maybe it sort of suggests that it's a little bit extra daring of Norman to set up a French restaurant. I will add that as the movie goes along, the French restaurant doesn't really do very well, which is perhaps not surprising. And so then she suddenly decides, or actually it's more gradual, but she decides to start focusing on Peruvian dishes, things that will appeal to the local population. And it turns out that she has a chef, interestingly, an Asian chef, who has a terrific flair for French food and can also do wonders with traditional Peruvian dishes. And so the whole thing, dare I say it, comes out very, very happily in the end for pretty much all of the characters. I haven't mentioned that Mistura is directed by Riccardo de Monturi, who's been around for a while and is a good director. It's a nicely done movie. So for a movie that sort of wants to be warm, wants to be cuddly, wants to be about a person becoming a better human being, it's just nicely done. And there's a lot of nice food to look at over the course of the movie. I'm not a foodie, but even I had fun just looking at and thinking about some of these dishes that are served up over the course of the film. So Mistura is a very, very nice movie. And again, what a pleasure it is to have a movie all the way from Peru playing on American screens. I hope people seek it out. It's not a great movie, but it's fun to look at. And the final movie today, I can't say it's such fun to look at, although it's kind of well done in its own sort of dank way, a movie called Apex. This is the kind of movie that has been called by some critics an ordeal movie, because that's what it's all about. It's about a person, in this case, a woman, as it so often is in ordeal movies, who is faced with a horrible, horrible, horrible situation. And what we watch for most of the running time of the film is this woman dealing with one horrific thing after another. Now, I have to say, this movie was directed by Baltasar Kormákur, who is an Icelandic filmmaker, and this is partly an Icelandic production, and he likes mountains. About 11 years ago, he directed a movie which I really, really like called Everest. I saw it in IMAX 3D, and I found it one of the most immersive and really exciting audio-visual experiences I've had in the movies in many, many years. So Baltasar Kormákur, the director, really likes mountains. And Apex begins with a mountain climb. Our main character, whose name is Sasha, played by Charlize Theron, she and her boyfriend are climbing up a mountain, and it's a horrible situation. It's one of these cases where the mountain is steep and challenging and the kind of thing that absolutely terrifies me. I'm an acrophobe anyway. Heights really drive me crazy, although I like watching them in movies. And then the weather turns bad. And before you know it, Sasha is all on her own in this horrible mountain climb, hanging off a crag. And we never really find out how she gets out of that. But then we get into the next part of the movie, which is the main part of the movie, where she is now going off for another excursion on her own in Australia. And well, what's going to happen to her here? Well, what happens to her fairly quickly is that she runs into another person who is also on an excursion, roaming through the hills and mountains and valleys and rivers on his own, and the two of them start to get to know each other. But then it turns out that this guy, this other guy whose name is Ben, just might be a total raging psychopath. And in fact, he is exactly that. The next thing you know, he is chasing Sasha around with this wild crossbow that can shoot all sorts of arrows at once, and things get way worse from there. So almost this whole movie is us watching Charlize Theron as Sasha, and oh, she is very physically fit, by the way, trying her darndest to escape from this horrible psychopath played by Taron Egerton. And well, does she make it? Does she not make it? Well, it's a movie, so here's a spoiler. The end of the movie, things turn out okay. But during the movie, a lot of times it looks like it's not going to turn out okay at all. And I will say there's one long stretch where Sasha, our main character, is literally tied to Ben the other main character, and she has managed to break his leg, and they may be stuck in this particular spot forever. So what's going to happen? I did not find all of the adventurous twists and turns of Apex very convincing, and sometimes I just said, "Oh, come on, folks." But hey, if you want to watch an ordeal, this movie sure gives you one. And if you are like me and you enjoy watching scary high places in the movies, then, well, you'll have a good old-fashioned scare out of this one. Apex, can't really recommend it, but it certainly is an ordeal in its own way. So that is my partly horrific story this week.
For which we thank you as ever and always, David Sterrett, Films in Focus, the films The Devil Wears Prada 2, Mistura, and Apex.
Films in Focus with David Sterrett is underwritten by The Movie House, your destination for first-run Hollywood and independent movies, and a digital portal to the Met Opera, National Theater Live, and special events worldwide in Millerton, New York, and on the web, themoviehouse.net.